The April sunshine, we'll get to work on that pretty quickly. Good spells of sunshine for most of the day. Dry virtually everywhere. Light winds too, and temperatures of 10 to 12 degrees. Saturday starts a bit chilly, but it turned into a lovely day across most parts of the United Kingdom. Maybe a bit more of a breeze in the far northwest.
Jay Wynn. Well, now our book of the week, She Left Me the Gun, continues. In South Africa, to piece together the history of her mother, Paula, Emma Brox meets her aunt Faye and discovers that even amongst the family in South Africa, a veil had been drawn over the crimes perpetrated by the women's father.
The house is in the U-bend of a cul-de-sac, in a quiet suburb made up mostly of bungalows and at the southerly edge of Johannesburg. It is almost dark by the time we get there. My aunt presses a button and the electronic gates open and close behind us. She parks the car under a carport alongside the house and we walk up the path. Through the gloom, I see a giant bird feeder on the lawn. Faye was characterised by my mother as the sensible one. She is the one who holds down a job and owns her own home. She has sensible children. She talks in a low, even sensible voice and doesn't get ruffled. Which isn't to say she'll be put upon. She is tenacious, like all of them, and when she gets going on a grievance, is like a dog with a bone. I have the same sense of her personality as one might of a celebrity, long talked about and unnerving to meet. At the same time, I feel instinctively protective towards her. Unthinkingly, I have absorbed my mother's position towards each of her siblings. Faye shows me along a corridor to my room, where I dump my bags, and we return to the lounge. I sit on a sofa, in front of endless framed photos of her children and grandchildren, on a sideboard where a TV might be expected to stand. She disappears into the kitchen, and comes back with a 3-litre carton of white wine, and 2 glasses. There was a glaring omission in my mother's paperwork. No letters from Faye. I don't recall seeing a single one. There were plenty from her sister Doreen, several from her brother Steve, even a couple from her brother Tony, but none from her favourite sister. Now, after Faye hands me a full glass and settles on the sofa, she pulls out some keepsakes, and there's a letter from my mother, sent in 1976. The baby has all my faults. I read and laugh. It's a backhanded compliment. My mother thought her faults a great deal more valuable than most people's virtues. Further down in the letter, she complains of being without family support. I have no one to leave her with. It was a refrain of my childhood. But I'm surprised to see it written here. There is no archness in the tone. Instead, there is something I never once heard in her. The ring of fresh vulnerability. Faye digs around in the file of keepsakes and pulls out a photo to hand me. It's of a teenage girl leaning against a wall and looking cross in a uniform. "My sister Doreen," she says. "What's she wearing?" "That was the uniform at the children's home." "What?" Faye blinks at me, surprised. "Where we were put, afterwards." I'm so taken aback I miss the cue. The conversation moves on. My mother's portraits of her siblings stand up well against Faye's second opinion. Mike was the worst with practical jokes. Tony was a terror for different reasons, drinking and fighting and getting into trouble. "My mother was fond of him," I say. Faye shakes her head and repeats what she said to me earlier. "He means well. It just doesn't always come out right." Doreen and Faye are next to each other in age. They've been through phases of being close and phases of not speaking to each other. A few years earlier, when Doreen found herself between addresses, she moved into Faye's spare room, where she lay around smoking and sulking and running up a huge phone bill, until after a blazing row, Faye asked her to leave. For a while she lived back in Hillbrow, an inner city area where my mother too had once lived. Soon after that she moved to the coast to be near Jason, her only son. She and Faye had made up and occasionally spoke on the phone. My mum said she was terrific fun, but you had to keep an eye on her. I say, huh, snorts my aunt. That's an understatement. Doreen is in her late 50s, as Faye is. She'd been a model in her 20s and fancied herself as a femme fatale. She flirted with everyone, men, women, geriatrics. Doreen once encouraged a teetotal called Joyce to drink an entire bottle of sweet sherry until Joyce vomited so copiously she threw up her own dentures and, having no money to replace them, had to work her shift as a teller at a movie theatre, toothless. Poor woman, says Faye and starts giggling. You were to lock up your spouse if she ever came round. My aunt sobers. I sometimes wonder how much of Jimmy there is in her. And there it is. The taboo is broken. I don't miss it this time. What? I've never talked about it. What, never? Never, not once. My aunt says this proudly. She's trying to impress me, I think. Which is to say, to impress my mother. And your daughter doesn't know anything. There is a long pause. My aunt looks at me. There is only one possible thing to say in the circumstances. I reach for her glass. Refill? The rest of what happens that night has had to be pieced together from notes I make a full 2 days later, when I can grip a pen again. The conversation circles around possible entry points. My aunt says her memory of events is very sketchy. She has a complete blank where the trial should have been. Nothing. Nothing. The word she uses is psychopath. He was a psychopath. There are two memories on either side of the darkness. The first is of a knife at her throat. The second is of a scene from the children's home afterwards. Nothing in between. It was her father holding the knife. The room was full of children. It was somebody's birthday party. She can't remember whose. Her father burst into the room, found his daughter, and while mayhem ensued, threw her against the wall and put a knife to her throat. He threatened to kill her if she said anything against him. After that, I don't remember anything. I am too frightened and ashamed to tell her I have read the court papers. It feels like an obscenity to know what she said in the witness stand when she herself can't remember. Do you remember any of the... My aunt's face shuts down. I don't remember it at all. I look at my aunt and see the brave, articulate 12-year-old who described incident after incident of abuse to the court and then fended off her own father's questioning. Remembering on that occasion got her nowhere. She has every right to remember nothing. My mother must have been devastated, I say, when the trial failed. I let my voice wobble, and alongside my aunt's perfect calm, it sounds self-indulgent. She shrugs. Your mum tried, but he was cleverer. The only one of them who he left alone was their sister Doreen, says Faye. I've never heard this before. Yes, she says. And then she says, I think she was jealous. What? Yes. At the time, I put this down to sibling warfare, so vicious, no insult is taboo. Later, I speak to a therapist who tells me that molestation is often presented by the molester as a gift. In households that are violent, it is usually the only affection on offer, and the child is made to believe it is a form, if not of love, then at least of selection. As we talk on, I find myself wondering where the eldest of my mother's brothers were. Why didn't they do something? And then recant the thought guiltily. What could they do? They were children too. Faye was 15 when my mother left. I had never thought about her departure from the perspective of the other side. Her claims to have led a central role in the lives of these people didn't square with their absence, except that it did. I see now. People who you can't be in a room with because their pain is your own. I was devastated when she left, says Faye. But I understood why. I say something tactless then. That my mother didn't come back to visit for 7 years because she didn't want to get sucked in. This hangs in the air. I would never have left this country for personal reasons, snaps my aunt. But she relents a minute later. There is a memory she has of her older sister from when they were living in Tadjur, a town in the Styx to the south of Johannesburg. The house was in the middle of nowhere, down a track, and surrounded by grassland. On my mother's 21st birthday, the children clubbed together to buy her a present, a pair of pink silk pyjamas. She was so delighted, says Faye, she stripped off then and there and, putting them on, walked clean out of the house, the children running behind her, screaming with delight. My aunt smiles. Everything that matters came from her. Here is my aunt's second memory, fading in from the black. It is of their father. After the trial, he came to visit Faye and her sisters at the children's home, as was his right. He had charmed the staff so thoroughly, she recalls, they read his letters aloud to each other. Incredibly, Faye and her sisters were made to keep a photo of him by their beds. Faye remembers so little, but she remembers this. Her father walking towards her in the home, carrying a suitcase of clothes for her. She told him she didn't want them. He persisted, and again she said no. In a temper, he slammed the suitcase and left. It was the last time she ever saw him. When I wake up the next morning, it's in a single bed beneath a window in my aunt's spare room. I lie there for as long as I can, and then, bent double, shuffle to the bathroom. I look down at the sink and at my own hands, which, through the prism of my hangover, look utterly foreign to me. Still bent double, I walk down the hall past the photo display and into the kitchen, where I look around in vain for something to heal me. The counters are fanatically orderly, everything put away in cupboards or Tupperware boxes. There is even a padlock on the washing machine to stop the maid from using it. Through the window, I see my aunt pegging out washing. I step outside and feel the sun strike me like a skewer inserted into my brain via the ear. The grass is coarse as a doormat. I make it to the centre of the lawn and lie on the ground. My aunt pauses in her duties to peer down at me. The expression on her face makes the hair on my neck stand up. Serene, detached, sympathetic to my mortal status, in contrast to her godlike invincibility. One of my mother's textbook looks, of course. "Aren't you feeling rough?" I groan. "No," she says, as if to be hungover is the most bizarre outcome of a night of heavy drinking. Faye laughs. "I don't feel a thing." In all those hours of talk, we had not talked of Marjorie. It feels like the most taboo subject. Faye might, understandably, feel vestiges of loyalty to her. "Did your mother betray you?" is not a question I have the nerve, or the heart, to ask. She is the blank in the story. And yet she wasn't always a villain. I think of her listing in my mother's address book, under Mum. I am too frozen on Sunday to have much of a reaction to what my aunt told me, beyond a sense of relief, that we are on the other side of something and have both survived, and gratitude for her generosity.
Our book of the week, She Left Me the Gun by Emma Brox, was abridged by Pete Nichols and read by Alison Pettit. The producer was Karen Rose, and it is a Sweet Talk production for BBC Radio 4. Where in a couple of minutes we'll have the late evening shipping forecast taking us there, sailing by. Thank you. And so now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 19th of April. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Atsira, South Atsira, Forties, Cromarty, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, new high expected Fitzroy 1,034 by 1900 Friday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Atsira, South Atsira, 40s, Cromarty. Northwesterly, 6 to gale 8, backing southwesterly 3 or 4, increasing 5 in 40s and Cromarty later. Showers, good. 4th, Tyne, West Dogger. Northwesterly 5 to 7, backing southwesterly 3 or less, increasing 4 or 5 later. Fair, good. East Dogger, southwest.